Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business. From liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do, the people in the spotlight. But what about those small business masterminds who succeed at making their money work harder? They do that by having a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, which now earns 5% annual percentage yield. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
This is Bloomberg Business Week. I'm Carol Masser.
And I'm Bloomberg Quick Take's Tim Stenovek. We're here every day bringing you the latest news from the world of business and finance.
Plus technology, politics, economics, all harnessing the power of Business Week reporters and editors.
Not to mention our 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries.
You can download Bloomberg Business Week on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Bloomberg.com.
You can also listen to our radio show at 2 p.m. Eastern Time on Bloomberg Radio.
Or watch us on YouTube. Search Bloomberg Global News.
Well, Katie and I mentioned some of the virus headlines, but we do like to do an update about where things stand with numbers. Cases passed in the globe, 223 million. Deaths have exceeded 4.6 million. More than 5.63 billion doses of the vaccine have been administered. Let's check in now, as we do each and every week, with Dr. Ian Lustbader, clinical professor of medicine at NYU Langone's Medical Center. He joins us on the phone from New York City. Dr. Lustbader, how are you on this Friday afternoon?
Great, Tim and Katie. Happy Friday. Lots of COVID news every day, it seems.
Yeah, and look, I think it's fair to say we're going to continue to be doing this Friday check-in with you and focusing on COVID for quite a while, because it does seem like we continue to get relentless news about the spread of the Delta variant. And I do wonder to what extent you think that the president's vaccine mandate that he announced yesterday for companies with more than 100 employees have to get vaccinated or face weekly tests, to what extent do you think that will put an end to the spread of the virus?
You know, I think there are a few challenges with the vaccine mandate. On the good side, or the good news, is that at least 75% of Americans have had at least one vaccine. Over 50% have had two vaccines. We also know that vaccines really have been very helpful in reducing severe disease, and, you know, masks are certainly helpful as well. So we definitely are making some progress. The challenge really is how to get everyone on board, and I think that's going to be very difficult. I'm not sure the vaccine mandate is going to be that helpful for several reasons. One is, by the time this is sort of set up in a regulatory fashion and, you know, potentially enforced, it's going to be a number of months down the line, and probably this Delta wave that we're seeing will likely be over sometime in the next few months. So you're sort of risking political capital and maybe polarization for really an unclear benefit. And I think a number of people may feel that, you know, having businesses incentivized for the health of their own employees may be the best thing. Local districts and businesses really decide. I think the idea of vaccination is very helpful. The challenge is, will you alienate people? There are some studies that suggest of the about, you know, 25 to 30% of unvaccinated population, About 30-35% of them say the reason they're not doing it is they don't trust the government. The other percent is concerned about side effects. So I think we need credibility. I think we need to reassure people to some degree about side effects and reassure people that there are no ulterior motives to slowly kind of chip away at that population that's been somewhat resistant. I'm not sure mandates are going to be, how effective it's going to be and how long it'll take to really get that in place.
And so that's an interesting point about the holdouts that are still unvaccinated that, you know, in your view, reassurance would work better. But I'm curious, you know, let's talk about carrots and sticks, because this vaccine mandate, clearly it's a stick. And Tim and I were just talking about airlines imposing fines on maskless passengers. I'm curious how, in your view, are we going to see more things like this, like penalties and fines when it comes to getting people to mask up or get vaxxed versus, you know, the administration or companies actually taking a more reassuring route?
You know, I think scientific data is always helpful, and believe it or not, we don't have randomized control trials. You know, we've been battling this for 2 years or more, and we don't really have randomized control trials about masks. And so when we talk about kids or, you know, the benefits of masks in schools and so forth, we, over the past 2 years, could have done really big studies and made some determinations. So I think we're relying on data from a number of other countries, and many of them don't even require masks. But I think individual businesses can do set guidelines for what they want. And an airline, if they publish, this is, you know, our requirements, you have to show your vaccine card or wear a mask during the flight, I think it's really within their right to do it. I think it would be more helpful if we had these studies already up so we can show people how effective it is, but it's certainly within their right to do it. And I think for short flights, for a couple of hours, it's very reasonable to do. You know, when you're talking about people on 5 or 6 hour flights to remain masked or kids, that's going to be tough to enforce in the middle of a, you know, 6 hour flight.
What about when it comes to the role that school boards and school districts take? Because we learned yesterday that Los Angeles is saying that all students 12 and older must be fully vaccinated by January 10th. Students need a lot of vaccines already. There are vaccine requirements at different ages for different schooling. I'm wondering what you make of this one, Dr. Lustbader.
Completely right, you know, Tim. We even mandate, which I disagree with, hepatitis B vaccines before, you know, kids really start school. That's to reduce the incidence of a potentially sexually transmitted disease. And, you know, these, it can be 12 years before a kid or more before kids are even exposed. So I do think it is reasonable to require vaccines or a number of vaccines required before school. But I think if we had safety data, more safety data and more efficacy data, people would be a lot happier to be on board with that. And I think we need to accumulate that and really reassure people. It should, over time, really reduce COVID in the schools. But I think parents would want to be reassured about it. You know, again, I think a lot of COVID is going to be over before all this gets enforced over the next few months.
Dr. Ian Lustbader, we unfortunately have to leave it there. Thank you so much, as you do each and every week, for joining us on this Friday. Dr. Lustbader is clinical professor of medicine at NYU Langone's Medical Center. He joins us on the phone from New York City.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
You know success when you see it. Or you think you do. The people in the spotlight. Athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. You need a company with extensive experience in specialized insurance. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and helping provide coverage that suits your needs. The Hartford offers insurance solutions that help mid to large-sized businesses, like yours, effectively manage risk, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. With extensive experience in underwriting, risk engineering services, and claims, The Hartford goes beyond the expected to deliver innovative, customizable solutions and service that your industry, that your business, demands. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
You're listening to Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Messer and Bloomberg Quick Takes' Tim Stenovic on Bloomberg Radio.
Well, it is the big story of the day when it comes to tech companies, and indeed Apple stock taking a hit as a result. A court ordering that Apple can no longer force developers to use in-app purchases. This is the culmination of the Apple Epic Games battle. With us now for the latest is Mark Gurman, technology reporter at Bloomberg News. He joins us on the phone from Los Angeles. Mark, how big of a deal is this for Apple?
This is a multi-billion dollar per year deal for Apple. This sets up major changes to the App Store where Apple will have to allow all apps, including games, to steer or have the option to steer users to complete transactions outside of the in-app purchase ecosystem, which would save developers 15 to 30% and obviously take that 15 to 30% out of Apple's pocket.
Mark, what does that look like for a user, for somebody who has been making in-app purchases? How much of a burden is going to be put on the user to actually go somewhere else to make this payment? Is it just going to be easier to pay Apple?
So there's a big question that remains. Will Apple require developers to offer both in-app purchase and allow them to also steer at the same time? So are developers going to be allowed to steer users without offering IAP? In the past, Apple has made these concessions while still requiring IAP to give the user choice. I'd imagine that's going to be the case. And I'd imagine there's still going to be some users who are going to use IAP for the convenience. And there's also going to be some developers who are not going to build external payment systems that could cost them a few percentage points and a bunch of convenience as well.
And so, Mark, let's broaden this out here, because you said this is a multi-billion dollar a year deal for Apple. That's a bunch of money. But what does it mean for the other tech giants out there? I mean, is this just the start of a wave of antitrust actions against some of these tech giants? Or what are you expecting?
Yeah, I think what we want to say here is that this is probably going to impact Google's ruling, right? There is a Google trial with Epic going, you know, that's going to be happening across the next year into 2022. And it's going to be very important for, you know, the ruling in there to take into account this Apple ruling. I'm not sure this impacts Amazon or Facebook, but definitely look for this to have an impact on the Facebook or the Google situation next year.
One thing that is interesting to see is the way that companies that have made or pushed back against what Apple has been doing for years. Spotify, for example, higher by more than 2%. Netflix, on a day like today, where the broader market is lower, is higher today by more than a percentage point. What does it mean for those companies that have long complained about this, what they call a toll on the App Store highway?
This has already been done already, right? Like, Apple last week said it would allow Netflix and Spotify and other media apps to bypass this 30% fee. So there's no news here for those developers.
The stock's still moving higher, though.
I don't know why. Clearly, the traders aren't reading our articles, right? this already happened a week ago.
So no difference. No difference for these companies. It's just the gaming companies that are affected because Apple exempted gaming.
No, there's no difference. Apple already did this a week ago. There's no difference.
The difference
is that it's for games.
Okay, wow. That is very helpful context. Hopefully,
they're listening.
The traders on the terminal click. But I am curious, Mark. We know that Apple is going to appeal this decision. Do they have any shot? And I mean, how far could this go?
No, I don't know. I just spoke to their general counsel, who was noncommittal on appealing the decision, so it's unclear yet. They say this is a resounding victory, a giant victory, and they're very happy with the ruling. So it's unclear what they're going to do. they probably knew they were going to have to do this anyways. That's why they did it last week.
Just in the last 45 seconds we have with you, Mark, do you think it's what does your gut tell you about Apple saying this is a victory?
I mean, I think they're right. They were ruled to not be a monopolist. They were ruled to not have antitrust issues. They simply have to expand a decision they made a week ago to games. They already did it for Spotify and Netflix. So there's not a lot happening here. They're also going to get about, $4 or $5 million with an M from Epic for lost revenue.
It's like a tiny amount of money for the company, Mark.
Yeah, Tim Cook could buy a new car, right? So, just a little bit of money. So yeah, overall, it's a big win for Apple.
Mark Gurman, it's always great to chat everything Apple with you. We really appreciate you taking the time. Mark Gurman, technology reporter for Bloomberg News. He joins us on the phone from Los Angeles.
This is Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Masser and Bloomberg Quick Takes' Tim Stenovic on Bloomberg Radio.
Well, Pulte Group, the paint maker Sherwin-Williams, and also the paint maker PPG Industries all slashing their outlooks this week as a result of higher input costs and inflationary pressures. Brooke Sutherland is Bloomberg Opinion columnist, and she writes about it for Bloomberg Opinion. Also joining us is Bloomberg Businessweek editor Joel Weber. He's on the access line from Brooklyn. Joel, I thought that these issues were transitory. I keep hearing about these higher prices being transitory, and I'm wondering to what extent it's going to continue to be a challenge to these industrial companies.
Depends who you're listening to, I think, because I think the companies themselves, and this goes just beyond industrials too, have been saying that they don't always think it's going to be transitory. But what I thought was significant about this is just how quickly things are beginning to change. And Brooke does a great job of outlining this in her story, that what we saw a couple months ago, it's really quickly changed, and we're seeing that. And we'll continue to see that in earnings. So, Brooke, walk us through what's changed and how it's manifesting itself in the data.
I mean, I think you really summed it up well, that it's just been so quick. I mean, you have to remember it was just July that we heard from a lot of these companies giving their most recent earnings updates, and things are just moving so quickly, particularly with some of the raw material inflation, but then also with some of these shortages that are just really getting to the point where manufacturers cannot find a way around them. But I thought one striking data point was PPG, which is the paint maker, said that raw material inflation was running $70 million higher in the third quarter than what it anticipated in July. And keep in mind, it was already factoring in a pretty significant headwind from rising costs in July. And so, that really just does underscore that this is moving faster than anticipated and not getting better.
And so, Brooke, transitory or not, I mean, how much pricing power do these industrial companies like PPG, like Sherwin-Williams actually have? I mean, are they able to pass at least some of these costs to their customers, or are they just having to eat this themselves?
No, they do have a good amount of pricing power, and I would say even more so in this current period. You're not really hearing about any pushback to price increases yet, with the keyword being yet, but they are being, generally able to push through pretty significant price increases to try to keep up with the rising costs. And I think that's because customers understand what's happening. I mean, all you have to do is look at the headlines and see reports everywhere about, various different kinds of inflation and shortages. And so customers understand, but there is a breaking point to this.
So what is it that's driving the cost increases, Brooke? Is it any one thing more than another? We've heard so much about container shipping prices going up. We've also heard about raw material prices going up. There is, of course, the cost of getting employees off the sidelines and making sure that they're coming into work. And we've talked to CEO after CEO who said that they've had to raise wages as a result of that. What is it that's driving these price increases and these higher input costs?
I think it's everything that you just mentioned. And I think, that's what makes it so difficult, is that it's not just one thing. It's not one product that you can't find right now that you're having to pay up for. It's almost everything. And then, with logistics costs rising, labor costs rising, raw material costs rising, you're really starting to feel the pinch. And one comment I thought was really interesting was we did a video interview with the Union Pacific CEO with a team of Bloomberg reporters and editors, and he was talking about inflation pressures from janitorial services
Wow.
to clean their office buildings, and people who mow their lawns, and their employee health care costs. And this is a railroad. That's not its main business, but these are major companies that employ, hundreds, if not thousands of people, and they rely on a lot of these ancillary services. And so there are the big ones that we talk about, raw materials, labor, logistics. But there are also these other sort of backdoor inflationary pressures that these companies have to deal with, even if it's not their primary industry or business.
So do you just not mow the lawn, Brooke? Is that the big takeaway there?
Maybe. I mean, I guess save some water, right? I don't know. Maybe you can save a few pennies there. But I mean, I think, you know, these companies have been incredibly creative about managing supply chain pressures and coming up with ways to keep costs down. I mean, I'm talking about rerouting ships, but also redesigning products. You know, I talked to the Honeywell supply chain chief a few weeks ago, and they've redesigned some of their sensors to get around the semiconductor shortage. But there is only so much of that that you can do, especially when things are moving as quickly as they are right now. And I think that's the period that we're getting into, and you might really start to see these supply chain challenges and inflation in raw materials and logistics really start to take a bite out of earnings in the third quarter.
So when you talking to the CEOs that you talk to and sort of attempting to understand where things are headed, Brooke, I'm really curious, are they viewing this as like, you know, the new normal, which, you know, was going to be September and now is maybe January, and if that, right? Or are they just recognizing that we're entering a new dynamic and these are really permanent changes, and that the sooner that they come to more permanent solutions, the better?
I do think it's a bit of a moving target. I mean, I think people were optimistic, you know, in sort of the earlier part of the summer that some of these headwinds would clear or at least not be quite as strong as what we're seeing right now in the fall. And that is obviously not the case. I mean, GE put out a statement earlier this week talking about pressures that it's facing in its healthcare business from limited availability of workers and parts. And they don't expect, you know, the operating environment to get much easier until, you know, the midpoint of 2022. And so we are talking about a pretty significant timeline here. I will say, you know, a lot of the manufacturing CEOs who've been in this business for a while, they have seen raw material inflation go up and down significantly over the course of their careers. And most of them would tell you, some of those price increases are probably not going to be permanent, but there will be some volatility there tied to, you know, weather events, tied to the reopening effects on the economy. But I think what's really sticky in manufacturing is wages. Once you increase wages, it is hard to take those back down. And so, you know, I think that is where they're getting a little bit nervous, I guess, in terms of how this plays out over the long term.
Well, I want to build on that because that's what's fascinating to me, that if we did see companies really have to raise their wages, that's how inflation kind of gets built in. So, I mean, how have these companies been approaching that? I mean, have they been offering sort of one-time perks, or are you actually starting to see some of these companies sort of capitulate and actually boost wages?
You are seeing them raise wages. I mean, I guess I will say there's a little bit of a divide between, you know, the companies that complain about labor shortages and the companies that are willing to raise wages, you know, where you're not quite, some of the companies that really go out of their way to make their workers feel like they're part of a community, they try to treat them like human beings, they pay them good wages, they're not complaining as much about labor shortages. They're still feeling the pain here, but, you know, I do think there is a little bit of that in terms of, you know, what kind of culture do you want to create? Because we also did just come out of the other side of a pandemic here. We have ESG is a big phenomenon, and you have investors getting, you know, increasingly attuned into what do workers want. And so I think that's definitely part of the narrative here.
Brooke Sutherland is Bloomberg Opinion columnist. She covers industrials and more. Also joining us, Bloomberg Businessweek editor Joel Weber. He's on the access line from Brooklyn. A big thank you to both of you for taking the time. Check out Brooke's article available at Bloomberg.com and, of course, on the Bloomberg Terminal. It's called The Earnings Crunch is Getting Real.
This is Bloomberg Businessweek with Carol Messer and Bloomberg Quick Takes' Tim Stenovic from Bloomberg Radio.
Well, one way that lawmakers propose to pay for the $1 trillion infrastructure bill that the Senate approved last month is by imposing tax reporting requirements for cryptocurrency brokers. It's the way that stockbrokers report their customer sales to the IRS. It could open the way for tighter regulation of cryptocurrency, and that's something that the Biden administration is moving toward as it also pushes for tax compliance. Let's get into it with Donnell Dixon, CEO and Executive Director at Stellar Development Foundation, a nonprofit organization that uses blockchain to unlock the world's economic potential by making money more fluid, markets more open, and people more empowered. Donnell joins us on the phone from California. Donnell, it's great to have you on the show. This was a very contentious part of the infrastructure bill, and I'm wondering what your thoughts are on it.
Yeah, it certainly became so. It was really fun for us to see the influence that we could have from the blockchain and crypto space, and for us just to really engage with policymakers. But in the end, I mean, the language is what the language is, so it didn't change. But it was really fun to be able to engage and to try to really create that educational opportunity around with these policymakers.
And so, Danielle, this bill, I know it was roundly criticized by the crypto industry for being too broad. Can you walk us through exactly what was the language that got crypto advocates so upset? I mean, what was the biggest point of contention there?
Yeah, so I think it was the definition of broker. So that it was defined as any person who, for consideration, is responsible for regularly providing any service effectuating transfers of digital assets on behalf of another person. And so the argument and the concern was that there are many players in the space that run, for example, validators that just validate transactions on working on blockchains, but they don't actually have access to any information that traditional brokers would, and they don't act as brokers. So there was just concern that this was very, very broad language with technology that's very new and maybe not widely understood.
If you could write the regulation or write the legislation, what would you want it to say?
It's a great question. I think that the regulation itself should just have exclusions in it at the very least to talk about that think about blockchain more itself as infrastructure and think about these providers that are allowing and helping these transactions just to progress, that they actually are excluded from the bill. For example, like validators and folks who run nodes. There was language that was proposed that we were comfortable with, and that we actually, you know, that it didn't ultimately make it through, but it would really just be excluding and making clear that it's not actually trying to go after these true infrastructure providers that are just helping blockchain to operate.
And so we've seen some efforts to try to change the language. Last month, there actually was an amendment that would change the reporting rules, but that was blocked by the Senate. So I'm curious, what's the path forward from here?
Well, I think that this actually created a really great opportunity for us because it showed that, first of all, there is this large constituency that policymakers are willing to engage with and listen to. And I think that the path forward is to create those open dialogues before you get to the language of a bill. I think that it's crucial to engage with lawmakers to discuss the use cases and the roles for different participants. And that's bringing industry experts and policymakers together. And so that's what we're really focused on doing now.
Which policymakers can you single out for us that really seem to get it?
Well, I think that there are many. I can't single out any particular we actually had some that supported language that we wanted to bring to the table. But most importantly, I think it's that when you actually understand how the technology operates and what we're trying to do here, I think that, you know, you'll understand that the definition of broker doesn't and shouldn't cover some of these players that don't have access to that type of information and frankly have no relationship to any of the participants who are making these transactions. So I think it's really, it's all of the senators and the members of the House that we need to really engage with, but it's also the regulatory agencies that we're really focused on participating with and engaging with. I think some of them understand what the technology does, but they don't have a knowledge of what the use cases can do and what it can and the value that can bring to their constituents. So it's a lot of work for us to do in the U.S., but I think it's actually really good work. And I think that, you know, once we demonstrate that excluding their own constituents from this really useful and valuable services that are offered through blockchain, they're going to want to be a part of it, and we're going to be able to help them to get there.
And so, Danielle, stepping back a little bit, it definitely feels over the past few months that regulators have started to circle crypto, whether it's the U.S. Congress with the infrastructure bill or just the SEC this week cracking down on Coinbase and really investigating their proposed lending product. I'm curious, what do you think is on the radar next? And we have just about 30 seconds here.
Well, I think that what a lot of focus right now is on the decentralized finance space. And so I think that we're going to see, we just have to provide a lot more education around that. I want us to be able to demonstrate the value of this technology neutral opportunity that we have that's made in the open and valuable to everyone. So I think we need to focus on a lot of different areas, but that's, I think, the next target space.
Danelle Dixon is CEO and Executive Director of Stellar Development Foundation. She joins us on the phone from California. Stellar Development Foundation is a nonprofit organization that uses blockchain to unlock the world's economic potential by making money more fluid, markets more open, and people more empowered.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do. The people in the spotlight, athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. You need a company with extensive experience in specialized insurance. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and helping provide coverage that suits your needs. The Hartford offers insurance solutions that help mid to large-sized businesses, like yours, effectively manage risk, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. With extensive experience in underwriting, risk engineering services, and claims, The Hartford goes beyond the expected to deliver innovative, customizable solutions and service that your industry, that your business, demands. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
I'm driving in my car. I turn on the radio.
How about you let me drive?
Oh, no.
Who's gonna drive you home?
Honey, please, I'll do the driving.
Drive on.
Excuse me, I want to drive.
Just drive, baby.
It's the question that drives us.
Drive on.
This is the Drive to the Close.
That funky music will drive us till the dawn.
On Bloomberg Radio.
Yes, indeed. It is time for the Drive to the Close. We are just about 10 minutes away from the market close on this shortened trading week. It's Friday, September 10th, 2021. We are seeing red across the board right now. Stocks taking a leg lower as we do get to the end of the session. Let's get into it, though, with Ryan Dietrich, Chief Market Strategist at LPL Financial. He joins us on the phone from Charlotte, North Carolina. Ryan, great to have you back on the show. Really glad to have you on a day like today, where we are expecting to see a fifth day of consecutive declines on the S&P 500. And I'm wondering, from a technical analysis perspective, what signal that's sending you?
Yeah, Tim, thanks for having me back. But you're right, guys. We're looking at, again, a five-day losing streak. But I was just looking into it. Is it something to really be worried about? Now, here's what you need to know. The last 5 days, the S&P is down about 1.4%. All right, that's the smallest five-day losing streak since one way back in October of 2016. And you think about it like this. Last year, 2020, we saw 35 single days with a worse return than we've seen the previous 5 days. So put a bow on this. Yes, down 5 days in a row is going to be the headlines. But to us, it looks like a normal consolidation. It is September, the worst month of the year. You know, there's some different factors there. But after more than 104% rally off those lows since March 2020, maybe just some seasonal weakness is happening. And again, it's relatively contained. We're not overly concerned right now.
So the sky is not falling. Keep things in perspective. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, we've been trying to say that for a while, I think. You know, I think of it, you know, there's always scary things to look at. I mean, and trust me, the worries are out there. You got the Delta concerns, the recent, obviously, economic data is not doing that great. What's going on with Washington? What's going on with the Fed? We understand a lot of the concerns, but the bottom line is just look at those earnings season. We just had record earnings season. You know, earnings are up 26% above the peak back in 2019. So, yes, stocks are close to all-time highs. Earnings are also at all-time highs and growing still really, really nicely. So there's worries. Don't get us wrong. But, you know, this bull market looks alive and well. But saying it with you, feel like a broken record saying this market's going higher because the economy's still strong. We still feel that way. And we still think there's, you know, time to go to this bull market.
So, Ryan, we're coming off of a record earnings season. We also saw record PPI this morning. I mean, if you look at the producer price index for the prior month, it was way above forecast at a series high. How are you thinking about inflation here? How does that factor in to what you're saying, this still strong economy?
Yeah, Katie, I mean, that's a great question because clearly that's the headline. If you look at the core PPI, it was a little bit lower, but still, things are more expensive. I mean, it's $5 to get a gallon of milk, at least $3 to fill, you know, per gallon to fill up your car. So people are feeling that. There's no doubt about it. But when we look at what's the market saying, is the market truly worried about inflation? And when we see things like the 10-year yield well off the 171 level from, you know, back in late March, we see copper well off the highs, lumber off the highs, break evens are well off their recent highs from a few months ago. Inflation's there, but it doesn't appear like the market is extremely worried. It's hard for us to see gold just flatline at 800 bucks an ounce and not be soaring if the market was worried about inflation.
Ryan, I just want to cut you, off there because you gave us a lot of data, and I just want to know the single signal that those things you just mentioned send. What are they?
Yes, the market is not as worried about inflation as I think the media. a lot of people are. The likelihood that inflation turns to a 1970-style spiral, the market in general, market participants are not voting on that when you see a 10-year yield still around 130. It's hard for us to believe that.
And so, Ryan, I'm glad that you brought up break-evens. And they've definitely cooled a little bit from their, you know, decade-plus highs. If we look at 10-year break-evens, the long-term inflation outlook, though, looks kind of sticky. I mean, it's not at the very peak anymore, but it's really just bounced back and forth in this range. I wish I could show our listeners a chart because it is amazing. I mean, what does that say to you that, okay, maybe we're not seeing an inflationary spiral, but it seems to suggest that inflation is going to stick around at an elevated level for at least a while.
Excellent point. You know, we had barely 2% inflation for like the whole decade, right? Then COVID happened and the economy came back, all the supply chain issues. It's likely that we'll see, you know, maybe 3.5% inflation for a year or two. I mean, that's not historically abnormal of inflation, just when we lived in a 2% inflation world for so long. It's clearly higher, but again, it's not that 7, 8, 9, 10% inflation that we saw in the late 70s and early 80s. So I think it's a very key concept. You mentioned break evens. Well, a little interesting. Let's go around the globe here. Break evens over in Germany and Europe are actually breaking up at some of the highest levels. UK, I think it's a 13-year high. Germany's multi-year highs as well. So there are some more inflationary expectations starting to show up across the seas over in Europe. Now, what exactly does all that mean? Listen, that's going to be a more difficult conversation, but we're seeing more inflationary worries overseas. We're just not quite seeing them here in the U.S.
So you said that we'll see 3 to 3.5% inflation for a year or two. Is that transitory to you, a year or two?
Oh, well, not a good question. We all thought transitory in the beginning meant like 3 or 6 months, but I think we've all learned transitory means it's sticking around a little bit more. But when you had the worst, you know, recession of our lifetime and the way the economy opened up with the supply chain issues, you know, it still feels to us like a little bit higher inflation is okay. But again, it's just not that runaway. And maybe that is the new normal. I mean, I hate to say this is the new normal, but maybe, you know, 3 to 3.5% inflation for a couple years is a little more normal. And again, that's kind of a long-term average of inflation if you think about it. I mean, you look at unemployment and inflation, the misery index, right? You know, that's right around 10%. That's actually the long-term average of where inflation and unemployment have been historically going back 50 years. So it's a lot of ways to look at it. But again, inflation just to us is not quite the concern. And if it was, we don't think the stock market would be doing this good. And we don't think, you know, those commodities and industrial metals would probably be a lot higher if the market were truly worried about inflation.
Okay, so inflation, maybe it's not a concern. How do you position your portfolio around that? I mean, are you going into more duration-sensitive sectors, or what looks attractive to you right now?
Yeah, well, on the fixed income side of things, we have shortened up duration. We think there is likely coming higher rates. We've got the 10-year yield we think could be up around 175 by the end of this year. Of course, that'll impact bonds, which trade inversely with higher rates. So we like mortgage-backed securities, which are not quite as impacted by higher rates. Now, that's the fixed income side of things. But on the other side of things, we do like the cyclicals, the financials, industrials, materials. The early cycle plays, along with small caps, historically early economic cycle of growth do better. Fully aware, they started the year off gangbusters in the last 3-4 months, have struggled. But we really do think we could see another fourth quarter rally like we did last year in some of those areas. Do not forget last year, guys, the Russell 2000 small caps gained 25%, an all-time record fourth quarter last year. To me, small caps have just been consolidating most of this year, and we think that that leadership from the cyclical value area likely will take the baton before all is said and done in 2021.
Ryan Dietrich, Chief Market Strategist at LPL Financial. We're going to have to leave it there. Thank you so much for taking the time. We really appreciate you joining us on the phone from Charlotte, North Carolina.
Thanks for listening to Bloomberg Business Week. Download the podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Bloomberg.com.
And you can also listen to our radio show at 2 p.m. Eastern on Bloomberg Radio or watch us on YouTube. Search Bloomberg Global News.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Johann Schmiegel, you've got the world's highest IQ.
Yes, 247.
Wow, did you know that thanks to Salesforce with Einstein AI, everyone's smarter? Now everyone's an Einstein, just like you.
But I'm the smartest.
Not anymore. With connected data and trusted AI, everyone can give customers experiences they've only dreamed of. Oh, look, here's a few Einsteins now.
Hey, hi.
Hola, amigo.
Everyone's an Einstein?
It's okay, Johann, let it happen. The number one AI CRM. Now everyone's an Einstein with Salesforce.